Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg.
Hey, everybody. This is the Brothers Wiss number 67. It has been a hot minute since we sat down and actually recorded one of these, so I apologize for that. It's mostly my fault. I don't have anybody else to blame. Today with me is Mikey from Indy. Oh, no, you're Chicago. What am I talking about?
Yeah, I'm Chicago.
Chicago. And then you got Thomas up there, his beautiful mugshot.
Hello.
Ah, there he is. Mr. Unimus himself, all the way from Slovakia. What time is it, Thomas?
It's currently midnight.
Such a trooper. Such a trooper. You're a vampire, though. Everybody knows that Slovakians wear Transylvania, is that where that is? The Dracula and all that good stuff?
Yeah, it's about, I don't know, about 1,000 miles from here. So, yeah. Close enough.
Pretty much. A lot closer than I am. Anyway, let's start this one off by saying we have a terrific sponsor called Sonar. I'm sure most of you guys have heard of them. It's a scalable, intuitive, comprehensive ISP billing and operational support system. Their URL is sonar.software. Please go and show them some love. To be honest with you, I hear more and more people talking about Sonar these days. There's a lot of interest. I know they're integrating a lot of things. I know a couple of big WISPs working with them that I think, I'm pretty sure how it works is you suggest a feature, and if enough people like it, then they implement it, isn't that?
Yeah, pretty much. They have like a whole like feature request system, all kinds of stuff in there.
I love it.
And I will be an official. I mean, I've been a Sonar customer for a few months now, but I'll be an official Sonar user. I'm guessing Monday, because the servers are shut off on Monday. My old ones. and I didn't get to finish the migration stuff on Friday, so. Hopefully today or tomorrow I'll finish up what I need to finish up, and Monday we can make the switch.
That's good. They're helping you get off your ass. I like it.
I've been busy, and actually,
yeah, me too.
With my consulting client, and with one of them, and I'm actually looking at moving them possibly to Sonar or something. They're using like a really old version of Platypus on a really old Windows server, like server 2003 old. I was gonna just move them to a new Windows server, move them to a new Platypus, just to not rock the boat too much. But looking at how many things are just jacked up in the system, and I'm like, maybe so many like tax things are wrong, and Sonar has like some tie-in with some tax company that like makes sure you have all the right tax rates for all the different services that you're doing.
That's cool.
So like I might just go with Sonar just to have that, but also looking at some other, you know, other stuff.
That's what a lot of consultants do, right? They go with what they're familiar with, right? It's gonna be a little bit streamlined for you, a little bit faster, cost the customer less money, I would assume. Let's see. You guys ready to jump in some hardware? There's a lot of hardware.
Sure.
All right, so Mikey, you probably know more about this. This was a million years ago. Mimosa did some reveal. Was it at like WISP America? Wasn't it like a new 24 gig radio or something?
Yeah, at WISP America, that would have been 7 weeks ago. 7.5 weeks ago. They announced the B24, which is backhaul in 24 gigahertz. And it's basically the same, like, there's not a whole lot of different functionality amongst their backhauls, like what a B5C can do, a B11 can do, a B24 can do. It's just obviously different, you know, frequencies, you know, for different, yeah, you know, pros and cons.
So is this an air fiber killer?
It's It's meant to be in a different spot in the market. It's cheaper. It has higher peak speeds, but you know, with all of Mimosa's products, they're all, you know, like the traditional half duplex stuff that we're used to. And so in a given amount of spectrum, it'll move more one direction than a full duplex radio will, because it's, you know, half of its spectrum's one way and half the spectrum's the other way. And but then, or, and it's a lot smaller. You know, it's only like this big. Whereas a B-24 is like the size of a mini refrigerator. But you know, there's an advantage to that, is antenna gain is antenna gain. You know, to have more gain, it has to be physically larger. Yeah. So it, you know, for your really long shots, comparatively speaking, you know, the Earthfiber 24 is still going to beat the B-24, but for all your shorter stuff, the B-24 is probably going to be better bet for you. And it has an SFP, so it's a better product.
That's it. So I could take a dog turd and put an SFP slot in it, and you're gonna love it.
Yeah. Actually, I'm one of the Facebook groups. There was a long rant about stuff, and I don't think I was even the start of it. But it went into SFPs, and one of the vendors, I said everything by that vendor was a cluster blank. So one of the guys that, you know, I've known him for 10 years at least, came back like, so what do you mean by that? So like, well, you know, there's no SF, like, you're the only vendor that has no SFPs on your radios, any of them. Back and forth, and, you know, other guys were like, yeah, you know, I bought, you know, vendor, you know, a different vendor's product because it has SFPs. Like, other people were saying that. I'm like, well, it's, there you go, dude. You gotta pick up. You gotta have SFPs in your products.
Fair enough. So, comparative. Well, do you know about what the street price is on that Mimosa radio?
About the same as the other. So, like, $500 to $1,000 a radio, whereas the B-24 is $1,500. So it's.
When you're saying are you talking about the Airfiber? The Airfiber's like, isn't that about that price?
Airfiber is about $1,500 per radio. The B-24 is somewhere between $500 and $1,000.
All right, there you go. So about a third the price, at worst, a third the price. It's pretty good.
Too bad all of my shots are like less than 1,000, like, you know, less than 1 kilometer, or like several miles. So like, I still don't have a good spot to use a 24 gig link, you know, 60 gig for the really short one, and then, you know, for short ones, and then, you know, something bigger for. Yeah,
that sounds like a good ones. Metro radio, you know, something in kind of an urban environment where you need higher throughput, maybe shorter distance, and resiliency to interference. That's nice.
I've got a few spots where I would love to use them, meaning I get these customers and I would use it. More so loving to use it because I'd have the customers, not so much using the radio.
Cool. Hopefully we'll hear from somebody using one of these out in the field, see how they're doing. Speaking of shifting gears, because that was in my head, let's talk about some of the European MUM hardware announcements. Believe it or not, we still haven't actually talked about any of the gear. I think the only thing we really talked about was the wireless wire stuff, which they now have it up to 200 meters. I've used it in the field. One thing I found is don't shoot it through a window. Seems to do pretty good. They're adding a lot of statistical features. So now you can kind of look at the antennas, and you could see kind of the, I think, the left, right, up, down kind of antenna array. So you can sort of aim it, I believe, something like that. Hey, Thomas, you got about 50 of them from the MUMS. Have you put any of them into production yet?
Yeah, so we've put one of them up, which is a 150-meter link. And it hasn't been doing that great. So I wrote to Microtik support, and we are going back and forth why. But basically, it's a 150-meter link, clear line of sight. It does about 700 megs of real throughput. But for some reason, the signal is slow, and so it's jumping down on MCS on the modulation schemas. So we'll see how that goes. It's the first one. We have plans to put quite a few more of them up, so we'll see how they behave as time goes.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think Microtik gave all of the MUM participants a free level 4 license, so you can actually upgrade one of those guys to be point-to-multipoint. So that was pretty cool of them.
It, I think Miller was saying that he's got, I can't find it because it's got
a
two
bunch. I think he says at least like seven of these things up, I think.
Oh, I was thinking it was like dozens, but yeah. You know, maybe not.
He's got a few of them up. So also, while I'm thinking about the WAP LTEs for the U.S., we started testing one this week, and we're using a Ting card, T-I-N-G. You go to ting.com. It's like you pay $6 to activate like a SIM card. So it's basically the way it works is you have an account. Every active like SIM card you have, it's an additional $6, but then it's a pooled data for all of those. And I think if you use 2 gigs, it's like 20 bucks a month. So really, we're just using them for out of band. So man, it's killer for that. Ours jumped onto a T-Mobile network, and we were doing like 17 by 5 on a speed test. That's it's pretty good. I mean, you can use it for backup, but honestly, we're just using them for out of band. And the way we utilize them, we use almost no data on these things. But I really like the install on these. A little confusing on putting the SD card in because I refused to look at the little picture silk screen on there. Had I done that right off the bat, it would have been much easier. But shove it in there, upgraded it, and I kept trying to add a DHCP server to LTE interface, and it just wouldn't let me do it. And I tried doing all this stuff. Well, it turns out on 642, they've hidden the LTE interface from DHCP. It automatically does it. So as soon as it connects, it does. So I felt pretty stupid. I didn't bother to go to IP address and see this thing magically appear. You know, I just assumed that all the, they need to update the wiki and stuff like that. The only thing I did have to change for these was I went into the LTE settings, the APN, and set the APN name to wholesale. And after that, man, they just connect up just fine. And they rock and roll. We didn't have any problems with them after that. And which is so night and day different than us trying to get like 4G, 3G USB modems to work with different routers and trying to find out which one has the right drivers on this. I got so tired of playing that game. And the ones we ended up finding, the USB modems that did work were these old Franklin ones. And to be honest with you, the throughput was terrible on them. So I love how we can just now take an LTE WAP and stick a SIM card in there and know it's going to work. So far our testing's been really good. We did it in the basement of our building, and these things have pretty decent antennas on them, so it's getting good signal. I'm surprised. I've Alex had a little bit of problems with his. I think he was trying with Verizon and an AT&T card, but it sounds like he's got a bad unit, maybe hardware-wise, so I haven't heard back whether he's had success or not. You guys have any interest in those things?
I wish they had wider LTE band support. And some of it doesn't even make sense to me. The bands that they support. I mean, I get it, you know, they probably just support whatever the chipset, you know, has. Let's see if I can pull up here. The carrier that I want to use uses bands 25, 26, and 41. the Yo Microtech LTE products support band 2, which is part of 25, but not all of 25. You know, they support looks like band 5, which is part of band 26, but not all of 26. So like, they just chose like subsets of the bands that I want. Like, why not just do the whole thing? You know, I would think that supporting band 26 would imply band 5, because it's a part of it. You know, same, it's just a wider frequency range is all it is.
Yeah.
But you know, they did that for a band that, another one that I don't really care about too much, but like band 4 is one of the other ones that it supports. And but it's not all of that band. You know, there's band 66 and 70, so it's like they could have made it just a whole bunch better by just
I know something. I was talking to like the HAP AC squareds, you know, the AC2s or whatever, using the new second wave AC stuff. I was lamenting the fact that they don't do standardized PoE, you know, like 802.3 AFAT. And Giannis was saying we couldn't keep it in that same form factor and integrate that additional circuitry and keep the price. So I would have paid an extra $3 for the AFAT. But maybe, again, it was just kind of a space constraint thing. So I don't know. Maybe it ran into something like that. Maybe they just couldn't. I don't know. Thinking, I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt why they wouldn't add all that stuff in there. Let's keep trucking on the list. Everybody's heard about the CRS 354s, which is 48 port Microtik 1U switch. It's also got 4 SFP pluses and 2 QSFP ports. I think Microtik said something about potential stacking in the future, right, on those QSFPs. So that's sort of interesting. And then they have a PoE version of that guy that looks form factor wise pretty much the same. No street price. This stuff, it doesn't mean a lot to me until I get an idea of kind of what the price is and sort of where it's going to fit in the market and all those things. I'm assuming it's going to be cheaper than the Ubiquiti stuff, but who knows? What else? They have a CRS 305, which I thought was kind of interesting. It's a little 4-port switch. It looks very industrial. No moving parts. It's got 4 SFP slots and 1 copper gig port. What do you think about that, Mike? Where does that thing fit in?
I don't like, it's like the little form, it's like the form factor of like their old 250s, isn't it?
It looks sort of like it, like the old school metal enclosures, like the small guys when they were first making like all Ethernet router boards.
like also like a 450 form factor,
or a bit bigger, a bit longer than a 450. But yeah, basically a 450 metal case, a bit longer.
What do you think, Thomas? Where does this thing fit in?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm sure that everybody will find a use for it somewhere, but I don't know yet. Yeah, we have to see the pricing. We have to see how Microtik switching features develop as time goes, and we'll see.
Do you think this is a solution looking for a problem?
I honestly don't know. Maybe maybe there is a market for it. Maybe there is not.
I mean, I don't think
I'm the right person to answer that.
No, I was just curious. I mean, you know, some things are immediately obvious. You know, like what are they like sort of the outdoor 5-port weather hardened enclosures that do PoE outright. That, I mean, that makes sense. You attach it to a pole, you power radios with it, things like that. This, it seems pretty industrial. I mean, I like the look of it, and I can think of a couple of situations I could probably use this in. Just, I don't know, just curious what you guys thought. It's also got dual DC input. That's cool.
Yeah, in any way that redundant power is included makes me very happy.
Yeah, it's also got PoE in, I think, or is that PoE out? PoE in, yeah. So it's got PoE in on that copper port as well. That's cool. Let's see. CRS 3309. I think that's not new. What else is new? They have 20 CRS 328. That's the 20 SFP port guy. It's got 4 Ethernet / SFP combo ports and then 4 SFP plus ports. That's pretty cool. Is that new?
Yeah, I think so.
Seems new. It's got dual power supplies as well. I like the look of it. I can think of like MDUs. That'd be good for kind of remote switch aggregation, stuff like that. Unless you're doing higher throughputs, you know, and you need all SFP plus. I could see that being kind of a good little core switch in those scenarios. Well, I mean, they also have the 32 port SFP plus one, which is the CRS332. So that could be sort of like MDU switch aggregation, some kind of switch aggregation. And then they have that mysterious... what's up?
I want to note that... Oh, heck, I'm not even using the right microphone. Let me swing it over. I totally forgot I had it.
Dingus.
I just know that almost all of these that we've been talking about, almost all of them have dual power supply support. So that's a big, big thing.
It's very, I like it. And you know something else I like? It's simple, but they also have a console port on the front, not the back. I like that. Remember in the past, they put some console ports on, but they stuck them in the back, and that always bugged me.
Speaking of console ports, one big disappointment is that still some of these products, even these new ones, some use a serial console port and DB9, and some use a RJ45, which is a huge bummer. I really wish they finally chose one and just stuck with one across their entire product line.
So we're going to start a straw poll and let the community pick, and they're going to go with it. I'm an RJ45 guy. I prefer that. I don't know. What do you guys prefer?
Yeah, personally, also RJ45. Dealing with DB9 is just what's not.
I prefer the... I've only used it a couple times on some Cisco switches. Micro USB.
I've never used them. I've seen them, but I've always just used the serial ports.
It just popped in. It just... You know, it just presents a serial interface in your, Windows, and just fire up PuTTY, and with that interface it presented, and it allows a bunch of other stuff. And then, yesterday, I was wanting to console into something, and I forgot my, DB9 to RJ45. I took it out of my bag for some reason. I only had the DB9, and I needed RJ45, so I went and grabbed one off of somebody else's equipment because it was just sitting there, not being used. Mm-hmm. And that didn't work. I'm surely, I never consoled into this box before, so maybe the settings are not the factory defaults, but, I tried it on 3 or 4 of them, and it didn't work. I'm like, so is the cable bad or wired oddly, or is it all of these devices' console settings are different?
It's because you're stealing adapters from somebody else's equipment.
Sabotage.
No, not a problem if you've got micro, everybody has micro USB cords. So, I've got 6 of them in my bag right now because they're small and cheap. So, I wish everybody would just move to that.
Let's just go to USB Type-C.
Oh, I could be down with that.
I don't have anything C yet, but yeah.
I don't have any equipment that's newer than 15 years old, so it's not going to work for me. let's see, what else do they have? They have a Powerline AP. I don't know if we talked about that or not, but it's sort of maybe. Did you guys figure anything out about this? It looks like it plugs into the wall and maybe does that Ethernet over the power lines, or maybe it's creating a wireless mesh. They say build Wi-Fi network without special cabling, so it's obviously an access point of some sort.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it does do some of that home HPNA stuff in the background. I think Ubiquiti, a few months ago, announced they were going to do something like that. so now Mike Kertick does. I don't. I kind of wrote those things off a long time ago because, like, they were always shit. Like, it didn't matter whose it was, all of them were garbage. And then Ubiquiti, you know, announced theirs, and I was like, yeah, you know, whatever. You know, I don't really care. And then I actually saw some reviews, and they're like, you know, like, actually, like, you know, people had like, used it, like, you know, not like Wisp, but like, you know, tech websites and things. And I guess they were actually decent. I don't know if, I mean, I assume that Ubiquiti and MicroTik don't have an army of, you know, electrical engineers that are developing these things from scratch. I assume it's just some generic chipset that they've both acquired and slapped into a box. So they've, you know, whoever's making those standards, those chipsets, must have finally, you know, turned it up and made the product that didn't suck.
I don't know. Remains to be seen. This is my skeptical face, and I'll wear it until I get one and try it out. Or I guess you need two.
I just personally really hope it has an Ethernet port, because from the images, you can't actually see if it has an Ethernet port or not. And if it doesn't, then, man, resetting that to default, and then, like, it will be a huge mess to properly configure it. So I just hope it does.
It says auto pairs with new devices, which I think is fascinating. The security implications of that.
Yeah, let's just not.
on the picture in the PDF, it does have like the like wired network icon.
It does. It has like a little Ethernet icon.
I hope so.
Well, I mean, you got at least one of them needs an Ethernet port, right? Otherwise, how do you connect it to the network?
Wi-Fi. It's all wireless.
Well, something has to connect to your cable modem or whatever.
Wireless over to your HAP AC.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. I mean, yeah, they could. I guess it would make it a lot cheaper if you dumped the Ethernet port off of it.
Oh, please let it have Ethernet ports.
I would assume that these types of things would be more popular. This is just pulling things out of that they'd be more popular in Europe, where they have much older buildings, not as easy to wire. There's probably not Ethernet, you know, whereas most of American, like half of American homes are, you know, less than 50 years old, 75 years old. I mean,
I don't know,
you know, much easier to run wires through.
I could see it being a good sort of extender option. So you plug one of these back behind your Wi-Fi router, and you just plug one at the other end of the house, and it rebroadcasts the signal. You know, I mean, that would be good for that sort of thing. Keep it simple.
Sure.
All right, let's keep trucking. Now they have the CRS-312. It's another switch, yet another switch. It's got 8 copper 10 gig ports and 4 copper 10 gig / SFP combo ports. That's interesting. That makes me wonder if they're planning on some products that are doing 10 gig, or is this just supposed to be some kind of small server aggregation thing? What do you think, Mike? Because I mean, copper 10 gig, you don't get much distance, right?
Yeah, I forget. It's less than 100 meters, you know, even under, you know, Cat 7 or whatever wiring. So if you've only got Cat 5e or something, you know, it's going to be really short. I haven't figured out why we keep making copper, like, faster. Like, why we did 2.5 gig, 5 gig, 10 gig.
Well, I don't know why we did 1 gig, then we went 10 gig, and then we went back and created a 2.5 gig, right? And that started to get more prevalent.
I think that was, I've actually heard, somebody authoritatively say the reasoning, but it was for wireless access points, because, you know, H11AC you know, theoretically could possibly do more than one gig, and then you run into the distance limitations of, you know, 10 gig copper. And so then with, you know, wave two and with 802.11 AD, you know, going faster and faster. And so, you know, putting the fact that people aren't actually going to move this much data through their wireless access points aside, you know, somebody needed to sell new switches. So they came up with a new standard for APs and switches.
I've done a couple of designs lately for some tech companies. And while I'm running copper up to the access points, I'm also doing a couple of strands of fiber as well. Not that they're going to use it now, but I assume at some point in the future, I think little offices like that will probably be entirely off of wireless. I mean, I could see in the next 10 years, basically everybody just switching over to wireless and to be able to get the throughput at those distances or whatever. Just run the fiber there. It's not very expensive.
At one of the podcasts I was listening to one time, actually had a guy on from one of the, you know, hardware manufacturers, and he was like, "I've never seen anybody saturate that one gig port on any products, even ours. Nobody ever does it. Yet somebody sell new switches, so." New Ethernet standard to play up the to support the theoretical but never realized throughputs of their access points.
You know what I tried out? So I know this guy that owns like this construction software company. They do a lot of really interesting stuff, and I found out they have an R&D lab, and I was like, why do you guys have an R&D lab? And anyways, they work on some really cool stuff. They basically pay a guy to play with Arduino and 3D print all day. It's bananas. I got to figure out how to get that job. But they had a HoloLens in there. And so I stuck that on, and I was just playing with the desktop. It sort of broke my brain because you put the HoloLens on and you you know, you do this thing with your hand, and then your kind of your start menu pops up, and it affixes itself to the nearby wall. And I was thinking, man, yeah, that's like the future of monitors, right? You don't have these things sitting in front of you. It's just... one screen is up here to the left. You look a little bit to the right, there's the next screen, and then you can just move all of your crap all over the walls. It was so crazy. That's cool. I'm ready for the future. Future man in my robot arm. I'm going to get a robot arm. I'm going to do my left one. It's useless as it is now. Let's jump over to the Unimus. Unimus.net now has a blog and a super cool feature just in time for the MicroTik hack that Thomas released. Let's talk about that really quick. So there's a MicroTik Winbox port vulnerability from 6.29 to 6.42. They put out a fix for the bug fix versions as well as mainline, and I believe RC in 6.42.1. But the bug, basically, if you had Winbox port open to the internet, it would allow you to somehow request the user file. And the encryption on the passwords in the user file is apparently not that great. So people were able to reverse those and then log in with valid credentials. And a customer of mine actually hit me up and he's like, "Hey man, did you just make some changes to my router?" And I was like, "Hey, I haven't logged into your gear in 3 months." And he's like, "Here's a screenshot of you logging in with your creds." And I was like, "That's not my IP. Where's that coming from?" It was coming from Taiwan. I was like, "Dude, I'm in Texas." This guy was in Slovenia is where he was from. So yeah, that was pretty bananas. So I actually know one or two people that got hit by it, but yeah, so it's not just enough to go IP services and put your allow list in there. Be sure to, limit as much as you can with a firewall, right? Thomas has been saying use a firewall. I think ever since the Vault 7 stuff hit, Thomas has been saying, how do you people not have your stuff firewalled? It's pretty common sense. But going on the heels of that, if you had a big fleet of equipment and you needed to en masse upgrade, Thomas added a kick-ass new feature to Unimus with configuration change push, right?
Well, so yeah, configuration change push basically anything you want to do, you can now en masse push it to the entire network from Unimus. And this is, of course, not just for MicroTik, but for all 90 vendors that, that Unimus supports. But with the recent MicroTik exploits and vulnerabilities, and not just the Winbox one, but in like the last 3 months or 4 months, we've had three or four router-less vulnerabilities that need to be patched.
Yeah, it's been rough.
As we mentioned previously, like just having a firewall would prevent exploiting on any of these, but still. You know, you need to actually upgrade to fix them. So one of the first things we did when we released the configuration push feature is, wrote a blog on how to use it to basically, in under an hour, you can have your entire network upgraded to the latest router-less using a local package source. Because, and it's actually surprising that not very few people know that MicroTik has the ability to use a local package source server. So, yeah, you can just put up a local package source server and then use Unimus to push to the entire network. Use this package source server, pull latest router-less package, and upgrade yourself.
Is that going to be your next MUM presentation?
Maybe.
Yeah, it's, I knew it had that functionality, router-less, but I never showed, like, why would I do this? Like, anything I'm doing with upgrades, I would just do it from somewhere else. Well, like, you know, back in the day, I'd use the Dude, and then I just, you know, went to smaller stuff or whatever, but now it's manual because there's other things broke and I haven't fixed them. And, yeah, you know, so I just totally forgot about that feature until you brought it up you know, in regards to all this, and I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. And that's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, I've heard people complain that when they use the MicroTik servers, it'll take like 20 seconds to download a package from them, right? Whereas if you have a local one, it should theoretically go a lot faster, right?
And not just that, but if you have, you know, 1,000 MicroTiks need to upgrade, that's a lot of data that you now need to pull, right? Like, yeah. That's a 20 megabyte package, so it's actually 20 gigs your entire network needs to pull if you're pulling it from the internet, which... Mm. Just makes much more sense to have that local package source and use it.
Yeah, that's a spicy meatball. It makes a lot of sense.
But that's, yeah, cool. Like, we'll be actually publishing a lot more tutorials now that we actually have a blog at Unimus. You know, how to mass deploy VLANs across the entire network and how to actually, like, detect things like, you know, do I have a firewall on every single MicroTik in the network? Yeah, with Unimus, it's actually really easy to also audit the settings of the entire network and find that out. So I'll be publishing some more blog articles, well, in the near future.
That's cool. I'm looking to start standardizing my configurations using this. I'm not always great about it. You know, sometimes it's a one-off over here, one-off over there, and you just forget about them, and, you know, you don't think to go back and verify those things, double check and all that mess. Let's see, trucking right along, because we actually got a little bit of a list going today. Ubiquiti announced a 10 gig Unify gateway. It's a powerful security performance and an incredible value. But I think the buy now price is $2,500. It's got 8 SFP ports, or SFP plus ports, I should say. It's got a 1 gig copper port, hot swap PSUs. I think this thing also has 16 gigs of RAM, 16 cores at 1.8 gigahertz. So it's got some processing power. They're saying it can support 5,000 access points and 20,000 clients, which is nothing to sniff at. What do you think?
I think that's the Ubiquiti marketing department at work. But also to provide some, not just me making fun of somebody, they recently came out with, for the Unify line, an IPS IDS functionality. I think it was based on Suricata.
Yeah.
And a bunch of, like, their own, you know, and some other custom stuff, and they do, like, you know, multiple times a day, you know, updates and things. And I think they're working on, like, their own, like, cloud intelligence thing where, like, somehow they gather statistics and determine other things. I think that's not really something that's working yet, just something that they want to do. But turning that feature on drastically cuts the throughput of the device. Like the standard unit, you know, because it's not hardware accelerated. So
also, there were some restrictions on which features you actually can run in combination with this, so it would actually turn off some features, and
they've had a couple of those that they've fixed already, being able to run some of those at the same time. You can't run hardware offloading with this because the hardware doesn't support, that sort of activity. So obviously that's going to make a big impact. Like the standard USG, I think they spec it out at like 1 gig. But when you turn on the IPS, it's only good for 85 megs. USG Pro, I think, is spec'd at like a 4 gig device or something like that. It only gets like 250 megs.
You got to think about who they're normally targeting with a device like that and a feature set like that. It's normally going to be like an enterprise. And 200 megs for your average enterprise is probably pretty decent.
But yeah, one of my customers, obviously I don't do everything for them. I do only a few things, but they've got like 1,500 to 2,000 employees across their network, and they pull, under 200 megs. So this would probably do that entire organization. $2,500 for a box to do. Well, I don't even need that. I would be fine with the cheaper box. I'd have been fine with the, I think the USG Pro is only like $300.
Mm-hmm.
This new one, has a bunch of 10 gig ports on it, but I think where it's really going to be useful isn't in shoving 80 gigs of throughput through it, but in doing IPS, at bigger throughputs.
Yeah. So I know in the data center world, at a lot of the tech conferences we've been going to, a lot of the lunch and learns, you see security is the bell of the ball right now. It's what everybody's talking about, it's very active on everybody's mind. So I think this was an incredibly shrewd move on their part to start putting in. Because let's not mince words. Unify is the easy button, right, for network administrators. It's all slick and clean, and there's only enough knobs, to not confuse, for the most part, right? You can get through it. And so them adding another easy button for security, I think, makes a lot of sense.
I could
see why they would do it.
And it's free.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that helps.
Yeah, for sure.
But I know this other guy, Willie Howe. He's from a town about 2 hours from me. He's got a much huger channel than we do, because he focuses all on like Ubiquiti stuff, Unify stuff, and that's, those are our biggest posts as well as, isn't yeah. Ubiquiti stuff. But he had a video a few, like 2 months ago, I think it was, where he, showed the, how you upgrade from the old Unify to the new Unify to get that IPS functionality. And he turned up like a Google Doc sheet for people to, copy and paste their alerts out of the console when they get different things flagged, so you can kind of get an idea of what sort of stuff it's catching. And of course, the one that I have in use right now, there's only a few people on it, so of course there's no malware coming through, so it's not flagging anything. So I'm just watching a blank screen, but there's a lot of it getting pulled, and from what I gather, IDS, IPS, they use the same amount of resources, because the hard part is in the detection, not in the
the after action. Yeah,
it
makes a lot of sense.
So I think that's where that's going to be most useful.
All right. So while we're talking about Ubiquiti, Cloud Key version 2 hits the FCC. I've heard people mention a few holes in the product that they hope are getting patched, and we'll see what it turns out to look like. I've heard of a few success stories. I've heard some people not... I mean, it's like everything. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Version 2 hopefully will fix some of those holes that people have problems with.
I think the version 1, I think it had a hardware problem with one of the types of power. Like, you could do it PoE or USB. And I think one of them, like, it functions, but somehow makes the device unstable.
Well, I heard too that if it loses power, you know, just kind of in the middle of service, that they tend to crunk up fairly regularly. So that could be problematic, right? Because theoretically, you're throwing these out at customer sites, and you know they sort of do what they're gonna do. You can't always trust the customer to, you know, cleverly or intelligently take care of the equipment that they don't know anything about. Let's see. I want to mention that I did my MUM presentation on getting full BGP feeds. I have a little system set up where you can tunnel in, pull BGP, like the full internet routes, and play with them in your lab from a couple of different sources. I've got at least 30 people, 30 random strangers from the internet, which I think is so cool, hooked up. Jump in there, try it out. I want to see some stuff other than just MikroTik Connect, because I know there's other... manufacturers that can do a standard L2TP tunnel and BGP as well. So I'd love to see some other stuff pop in. And if you do, shoot me your configuration so I can post them up for other people to use. I don't really get anything out of it. I just think it's like super cool when I see people connect in. Like I told somebody, the 15-year-old kid in me says, wow, every time I see it happen. Let's see what else. Mike put something in here about the LHG60s hit the FCC finally.
I think it was like 2 months ago now, but I've got mixed feelings on it. I was really confused at first because I heard that it's still doing beamforming, but yet it's doing like the same sort of reflector style that the other LHGs are, and I didn't quite get how that was supposed to work.
To just do it in reverse,
it'll sort it out, but then it kind of clicked at me that, you know, like, you know, beamforming on a point to point, how is this useful for alignment? When since the newer software tells you which antennas it's using, you know, which degree up, down, left, right from center, at a minimum, you could use that to help you align the darn thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I just said LHG. This is the MikroTik LHG60, so it's their long distance 60 gigahertz radio, but also, as atmospheric conditions change, right? So, I mean, if you have it in the dead of winter tuned, in the heat of summer, I mean, it's going to be slightly different, right? And 60 gigahertz is a very tiny wavelength that you're working with. And so, I mean, I guess this could sort of auto-tune it for you just a tad, maybe compensate a little bit.
Yet, if it's built into the chipset, I guess why not use it for whatever you can get out of it?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. That's cool.
I just wish it had an SFP.
You and me both.
And, you know, it's a lot cheaper than the product I'm deploying now, but no SFP. All right.
Let's see what else we have in here. You've got some...
I'm personally really looking forward to deploying the LHG60s.
I am too. I'm excited.
Bring them on. I want them everywhere.
Do we have any idea of the street price of those things?
Yeah, it was $300, I think, for the pair, for the link.
God, that's insane. Because the regular WAP 60s are about $180-ish. And so this at $300, that's insane. That's insane. The throughput and the distance.
And that would work really good with your kind of WISP deployment model when it's MOS, where you're doing a whole bunch of micro pops and short distances. you know.
That's exactly what we want them for. We want to completely upgrade and rework our backhaul with our microcell architecture, and we will be using these and the Web60s a lot in the coming future.
I mean, for you too, these LHG60s aren't just higher throughput than you're getting. Now you don't have to worry as much about the interference, right? If you're doing 5 gig backhauls, that sort of goes away.
That's exactly our, because our spectrum is garbage. Our spectrum is just complete garbage everywhere. We usually run 10 and 20 megahertz channels because we can't even get bigger ones. I mean, with a micro architecture, you can still get by with this because, you know, of the different architecture. But I have high hopes for the 60 gigahertz stuff from MicroTik.
That's cool. I also like the idea of, so we do some stuff in like some urban environments, and to be able to do almost like a, you know, like a laser shot to something, you know, say 5 blocks away that normally you'd have problems with 5 gig, just multipathing, and just it's trash in a lot of our areas too. I'm excited about that, to be able to do that. I can't wait. We've been waiting a while on those guys. Mike, you have something in here that says XLEX stuff. What's the story on that?
I made a Facebook group, I think this morning, maybe. or last night. I'm in a whole bunch of different WISP groups, obviously. I'm in a couple fiber groups. But, you know, one of my consulting clients...
You have your own SFP group.
I do. Not a lot of activity in there. I think I made it to complain to somebody and to kind of rally some support. And I think I got the support, and then I got the response, but I think it was a false response because they haven't filed through yet. So I may have to reactivate that group. One of my consulting clients, is purely wireline but no fiber. You know, they do DSL, they do POTS, they do voice, but it's not like, you know, we go to, you know, random VoIP reseller and, you know, throw up a SIP connection. No, like they have like a big chassis voice switch and, you know, DS3s and stuff like that. And I could not find any Facebook groups for people that worked in that sort of environment. So I may be doing. I've already got like 50 some people in there already. I have a bunch more actually waiting to join that I haven't accepted because I have two questions that Facebook asks you, you know, during your joining. And they're really simple. It's like, you know, what does this group do and how are you connected? You know, to what this group does. There's a bunch of them that didn't answer, or they answered one of the two questions. So I haven't accepted them. Answer the questions. They're simple questions. So if you do that kind of stuff, you know, DSL, you know, TDM, telco stuff, join the Facebook group. All then, right. Obviously, use Facebook.
Nice, nice. Well, it looks like we're rolling up on our hour. You guys have anything else you want to add? You want to throw in? Or you want to put a bow on it? All right. Silence means we're done. So, something.
We're just tired of looking at you.
Fair enough. I mean, like you know what's weird is when I do these things, I stare at my own video picture. I don't look at you guys. I'm watching myself for some reason. I don't know why, but I do that. I know why, because you know why I'm doing it.
Keep that up, and you might be able to run for governor of Illinois.
I could never do politics. I can't lie.
It's convincingly. Fine, Rick. I was going to say I'm only looking at your picture as well.
Yeah, damn right. All right. Something I thought, normally what we do is I scan through some of the Slack stuff and try and come up with some of the interesting things that came through the Little Brothers WISP, right? So if you want to join the Little Brothers WISP Slack, you go to patreon.com/TheBrothersWISP. You jump in there. We actually have a pretty decent list of people now. So I'm going to run through just really fast some of these cats. And then whenever we get new ones, I'll shout you out. Maybe, you know, every week we'll just shout out the new guys. hopefully they'll be talkative. I know a lot of them are lurkers, and that's totally cool. I lurk a lot as well. Some people are more verbose. They're just talk about things that they happen to be working on. And my brain, I don't know. I don't think to pop in and share that information. I need to be better about it. I'm trying to get better about it. But we've got, and I'm going to butcher a lot of these. This woman, Lily Singh, Philip Tanner, Britton Turner, Casey Dyer, Tyson Shreves, Michael Lingwell, Josh Reynolds, Samuel Lovelace, Michael Roan, Kevin. There's no last name associated with it. Timothy Steele, Ryan McAfee, Steve Gilbert. That's the cat who helped me with the BGP project. Thanks a lot, Steve. Yevgeny Kuksenko. I'm totally sure I got that 100% right. Greg Varga, Tim Leo. Greg Varga, we can only have one Greg there. I'm going to have to decline you. I'm sorry, sir. Jason Wilson, Jeremy Hall, Jim Jones, Adir Winter. Get some of that Adir money. Ollie Morton, Sundheim. He's talkative. That's a good guy. He's in there sometimes. Tommy Krugan, Drake Schiffers, Adam Montgomery, Nick Baraglino. Baraglio. That cat's super talkative. It's great having him in there. Fred Moses, Glenn Kelly, Fred Tipps, Dan Phillips. And also, I think Nick must be like 80 years old. He's always talking about all kinds of weird old stuff, like how he used to use AIX and stuff like that. Dan Phillips, Nick Arellano. That was the Nick that we actually met at the MUM. He had that long, beautiful hair. First patron we've sort of met in real life. John Osman and Simon Westlake from Sonar is also. So, get a shout out next time. Unless you don't want me to shout you out, you kind of, you know, one of those hidey hole people. Tell me not to. Other than that, I'd like to, you know, as new people pop in, just kind of say, hey, thank you for being a patron. So, Thomas, if people want to find you on the internet, how do they do that?
Yeah, just Google for my name. I'm easy to find, you know, Facebook, YouTube, whatever. And, of course, unimus.net.
Unimus, finally.
A cool new blog. There will be tons of cool stuff coming to the blog. Yeah.
That's cool. Sweet action. Mikey, I know what you're going to say. Don't find me on the internet. I'm too busy.
Yes.
All right. And secretly, if you post on Facebook, or rather, all the Facebook posts are coming from Mike. That's all his baby. And also the quick responses on there. So if you want to get a hold of Mike, jump on the Facebook page. That's probably the easiest way to get a hold of him. Or if you're in the Slack, he's actually extremely active and reactive in the Slack. I'd almost say that's probably the best way to get any of us, because I respond very quickly to the Slack stuff. It's just convenient. God, it's so convenient. You know, because it just boops on my phone as somebody ets me, and I just blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I love it. If you want to get a hold of me, you can go to gregsoul.com. I do some of the consulting stuff. I do some of this, some of that. You never quite know. If you want to play pickleball, I just played in a tournament. Got third place. Holla. Let me know. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to the patrons. Thanks for the listeners. Thanks for you lurkers out there. If you can't afford to support, I don't care. As long as you're here, thank you, guys. Thanks for contributing to the community, and we'll see you soon.
See ya.
Bye.